Welcome, fellow denizens of darkness, to another episode of A Dark Cup of History, our spin-off episodes where we discuss the weird, woeful, and wicked parts of history that they don't normally teach you in school.
Now we know we're a little late, and for that we apologise. Following our return from Amsterdam, I had a personal issue that I unfortunately had to deal with, but all is now getting back on track, and we are here to spread the spooky. Ooh.
We have some videos and snippets to put up on our social media about our trip.
Which is on Cover History and our individual, well, your individual TikTok. I haven't done mine yet.
It's fine. They'll be on our TikTok and our Instagram. We should probably go to Facebook. So yeah, a cup of Hister tea on all of our socials to see all different videos, vlogs, pictures of our trip. It was a great time and very enlightening. Though we're still trying to figure out how she got so much string in there.
I mind blown. I don't know.
But we want to say thank you to the citizens of Amsterdam for being so welcoming to us.
We may do a more in-depth episode at some point about the city herself and how she came to be what we now see and enjoy. And our next episode is going to be about an arguably one of her most famous citizens. So follow from a definite. What? What am I saying? I am saying words. No. And following from a definitely thought-provoking must-see part of our tour, Anne Frank. So follow us and subscribe not to miss that one.
But for now, we walk together through the cobbled streets of that capital city to see what lurks behind the townhouse doors or just below the surface of the canals.
So grab your cheese and Stroop waffle, get safely to your nearest coffee shop, and
And
let's
let's
get
get
dark.
dark. I love Stroop Waffle.
You really do.
It's so
You
good.
love Stroop waffle 5 kilograms much.
Hey, I brought some Stroop Waffle home for my family and for Tobias
Got
and for
some too.
Luke.
Hi guys.
They enjoyed the Stroop Waffle.
They did.
So that's. We fit them in a bag. We didn't have to pay extra for the kilograms.
It's the fact that
Is it
basically,
very heavy?
so we had 23 kilograms luggage
Yeah.
allowance. When we went over, it was only 17 kilograms. When we
Yep.
came back, it was over. It's like 25, and I joked. I was like, "Huh, but it's all the Stroop waffle." We took out the Stroop waffle. It was the
We
Stroop waffle.
did.
Yeah, it was probably also my boots as well, like my heavy boots. But yeah, it was mostly the Stroop waffle.
Yeah, good day. I'm not sad
Oh,
about
worth
it.
it. Absolutely
I'm not
worth
sad
it.
about it.
So,
Anyway, we digress
moving past.
massively.
Yeah, sorry. So, firstly, we apologise in advance for any Dutch names we may mispronounce.
I will mispronounce.
I have done as much research as possible about the pronunciations, and we will do our best, so
Carry will.
please bear with us.
I will
I will
say
try.
them, you will say them.
We thought it would be a good start to give a very, very brief overview of the history of Amsterdam to start our tale.
Amsterdam, meaning the dam on the River Amstel. Amstel Dam, huh, is the capital city of the Netherlands, located in the province of North Holland. It is the most populous city in the country and is designated UNESCO World Heritage Site because of its history and large number of beautiful canals.
It started life as a small fishing village that sprung up around a dam constructed to ward against the regular flooding of the powerful Amstel River. Archaeological remains have been found to indicate settlements there as back as 3,000 years ago. It's believed that the initial settlements may have been seasonal due to the issues. Sorry, losing my voice there. Due to the issues around flooding, a situation that did not change until the dam was built to control the flow of water.
Following on an incident known as All Saints' Flood of 1170, where the North Sea flooded large areas of land, including washing away the
Creela.
woods and the settlement known as Arotta, a connection between the Amstel area and the sea was opened, making it more attractive as a permanent settlement for fishermen and traders.
The dam was constructed in the late 1200s to better control the water, and eventually the settlement grew to be known as Amsterdam or Amsterdam under the see of the Bishop of Utrecht. It was created as a city in the early 1300s and continued to grow, joining the Hanseatic League and becoming a powerful trading port with independent links across the Baltic Sea as well as within the League.
We've got to say it. The Hanseatic League was created here in King's Lynn.
So,
It was created here
praise!
and Amsterdam, so there was definitely people that would have gone from Lynn to Amsterdam and back.
Yes. Actually,
The more we
yeah.
do of this podcast, the more I find how historical my teeny tiny little town is.
Yeah, considering until I'd met you, I hadn't heard of your teeny tiny town. And yet it's
pretty much it. It has a lot here.
It's got everything.
Everything you need, including us.
Definitely. Through changes in monarchy, conflicts, plague, and reformation, the city has continued to thrive, becoming an important cultural and artistic centre, as well as a very popular tourist destination. But as with every city, there is a dark side.
Let's take a closer look, shall we?
Now, you think of Amsterdam, and let's be honest here, you're going to think of the Red Light District.
Pretty much.
They're famous for their open-minded and caring approach to the oldest profession in the world, prostitution.
The Red Light District, during the day, is quiet and somewhat quaint. You can take a stroll along the canal, dip into one of the bars, Excalibur,
yep,
and see the empty windows around. At night, it's a very different place. Vibrant, full of beautiful women and those seeking pleasure, or a bit of enlightened fun. It also is full of spirits.
And we don't just mean the cocktails at the Moulin Rouge.
They were very good, though.
They were good, to be fair. Walk down the Red Light District, heading towards Central Station, and you'll see a small, unassuming side road with an interesting name. Spooksteg, the Ghost Alley. This is one of the oldest parts of the city and has yet to let go of its past.
In the 1700s, the Spooksteg was home to a tanner, someone who worked with leather, who lived with his two daughters, Helena and Dina. Dina found love with a sailor, but it was not to be a happy love, and as her sister Helena was jealous, as she was also in love with said sailor.
Poor Dina met an untimely end when she fell down the steps of the cellar to her family's tannery. The grief of her sister was called into question when Helena married the sailor that her sister had loved. It wasn't until later, on her deathbed in 1753, that Helena confessed. She'd thrown her sister down the stairs and killed her, making it look like an accident. A woman spurned in love will do anything, it seems.
That's hardcore. After hearing her confession, the sailor cursed Helena's soul to roam in internal restless misery, and his curse worked. If you wander down Spooksteg at night, you will hear the screams of poor Dina as she falls to her death, followed by the tortured moans of her cursed sister. Follow the sounds and you may just catch a glimpse of Helena wandering the alleyway towards the
Zee Dyke,
forever laminating the dark lengths she would go for love. I mean, love is love, but I would not push my sister any, like, down some stairs. Wait. It was one step.
It was, and to be fair, you were young, and it wasn't for love.
I was six.
Yeah, you were six, and yeah.
Exactly. I wouldn't push my sister down the stairs to kill her.
Yeah,
because exactly. Of love.
Exactly.
If it pisses me off, she'll go down the step.
But not because of love. You wouldn't do it for a man.
No, definitely not.
Sticking along near the Red Light District, you turn your back to the ghosts of Helena and Dinah, if you're brave enough, and walk back down the Udesides Achterbeurval until you come to the Bloodstraat, the Blood Street. This side street connects through to Newmarket, which is where prisoners were once publicly executed.
The street is said to have received its macabre name from the blood of the executed prisoners running down the canal. But there may be more to the story as well.
The area used to be the location of a Franciscan monastery, an order of Christian monks that dedicated their lives to the teaching of St. Francis. The monastery contained an infirmary where people would be treated for disease and sickness, but also for more grievous wounds and amputations. And where would the blood from those go? And where would the friars and those who did not survive treatment be buried?
During the late 1500s, a perfect storm of political and social unrest, as well as a famine, led to the bubbling up of religious reforms attempted by the Calvinists,
yeah,
Protestants who followed the theology of John Calvin.
The Netherlands at that point were largely under the rule of the Habsburg Empire, controlled from their main seat in Catholic Spain. The Calvinist outburst caused the Habsburg leader, Philip II of Spain, to send one of his governors, Fernando Álvarez de Toledo y Pimentel.
Oh, well done, Gary.
Thank you. The Duke of Alba, we'll call him Alba.
Yes, please.
At the head of a large army in 1567.
Once there, Alba set up the Council of Troubles, composed of Dutch magnates and Spanish officials, and they set about enforcing adherence to Roman Catholic doctrine and condemning to imprisonment or death for heresy thousands without proper legal process or redress.
This led to an ongoing conflict between the council and the Calvinists, resulting in the Netherlands revolting against Spain in 1608 to 1609. Eventually, the Council of Troubles was abolished by Philip II in 1574, but not before it gained an alternative moniker, the Council of Blood.
The Phoenician monastery was the base from which Alba and his Council of Blood worked along the Spanish Inquisition. During later renovations of the properties in the area of Bloodstrap and Newmarket, human remains have continued to be found as recently as 2001.
From all that violence, that terror and pain, not to mention the now displaced bodies of those laid to rest, echoes are heard. Moans and groans seem to echo down the street, cries of pain and sorrow. Cold spots are felt, and there's a pervasive feeling of being watched by someone you can't see, however fast you turn around.
I hate that.
Just that feeling of being watched.
Yeah.
Icky, isn't it?
Mm. During the day, we're now going somewhere different, by the way. So, during the day, Dam Square is a hive of activity, with tourists going to visit Madame Tussauds or Ripley's Believe It or Not, or stopping to gaze up at the impressive royal palace, maybe taking a guided tour inside.
When the sun sets, though, the path takes over. Take a trip down into the nearby Amsterdam dungeon to learn about some of the souls that lurk here, tortured by some of the devices you'll find within there, or the Museum of Medieval Torture not far from there.
Which we went to.
We did. There's some inspired instruments in there, shall we say?
Souls of those condemned by the Spanish Inquisition, burned as heretics, or tortured and executed for witchcraft. If our studies of the Inquisition and the witch trials across the globe have taught us anything, is that you can bet the majority of those poor souls were harmless, innocent people caught up in the hysteria of it all because either a neighbour had a grudge or someone wanted their land or they dared to speak a little bit out of turn.
Yeah, if you're a woman that showed a modicum of intelligence. Oh my God.
Witch.
So it's no wonder that the Dam Square becomes sinister at night, with moans and howls, spine-tingling feelings and things out of the corner of your eye that you definitely didn't see. If you're brave enough to go into the dungeons, you might not just see actors down there, as the Amsterdam dungeons themselves were constructed on the site of a 16th century cemetery, where some of those who met their end in Dam Square may have been laid to rest. A haunted dungeon attraction, that's what everybody wants, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Then again, they've got the actual Warwick Castle dungeons are actual former dungeons as well, so that's probably haunted as heck too. Mm. Actually, no, I know it's haunted as heck. I've done a ghost up there.
Yep. A black bargain. One of the most notorious spirits to roam the streets of Amsterdam is that of Black Matthew. Matthew was a magician, highwayman, and a thief who gambled and tricked his way through life in the 13th century, back when Amsterdam was only starting to come into her own.
Renowned for using magic and trickery to cheat at gambling, Matthew one day met his match in a mysterious figure who could not seem to be beaten. The gaming turned dark when the stranger coaxed Matthew into betting his soul, and he lost. For the stranger was none other than the devil himself, and Matthew had cursed himself to endlessly roam the streets of Amsterdam, looking for a way to be free of his deal and let his luck turn towards eternal rest.
He doesn't have to set pace to roam. He could turn up anywhere, so watch your back and guard your purse. Pickpockets are nothing compared to a restless soul.
I mean, a lot of these spirits kind of have a roaming location, but yeah. Black Matthew can literally turn up anywhere in the city.
It's not a huge place, so...
It's not a massive city. Like, compared to some cities that we know, it's not huge. But also, you know, you could be walking down the street one day and bam, he's there. And then the next day you stumble out of a pub on the other side of the city and bam, he's there. And you're like, Yep. Next, we have the spin house.
Sorry.
You all right?
Had a burp.
Here we have another tragic love story. Only this one did not involve a jealous lover. Instead, the old spinning house or head spin house. It's not as pretty as it sounds. It was actually created in 1597 and served as a penitentiary for troubled women, in inverted commas. That could mean women who have committed crimes, sure, but also ones who were outspoken, disobeyed their husbands or fathers, were mentally ill or had learning difficulties. It was a big umbrella term.
One such young woman made the tragic mistake of falling in love. Her lover was a priest and their love was forbidden. They were prohibited from seeing each other. The priest went mad being kept away from her, and he took his own life. The woman, overtaken by her grief, was to spend the remainder of her life at Spin House.
The building is now a popular hotel, though it's said that one of the rooms plays host to the restless spirit of the priest, and he is so strong a presence that even the staff there have been known to fear the room.
Wow.
Priest would be quite a hardcore spirit.
Not just a priest, but a priest who took his own life. Like, that is the ultimate sin.
Yeah. He must have properly loved her.
Yeah. Imagine loving someone that much.
I literally said that to you today about Edward Cullen.
Yeah, you did. I don't... I mean, I've loved someone pretty hardcore to the point where it broke me when it went wrong, but I don't think I've ever loved somebody to the point where I would kill myself or eternally go through high school.
Oh, no.
High school was not a good experience.
I did not
for
enjoy
us.
High school.
No. Best years of your life.
I mean, if you're skinny, pretty, and popular, yeah, sure.
Yeah, we were not.
The Tower of Terror.
I mean, pretty, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, duh.
Tower of Terror, not the ride in Disney World.
No.
During its time as a bustling trade and fishing port, Amsterdam has seen its fair share of trouble from abroad. In an effort to protect itself, a number of defensive fort towers were constructed, some of which can be seen along the canal to this day, given new life through, though their past still remains.
One such fort is the Montalban Tower in the Oudeschans moat. Built in the 1500s to defend the city, it could not save everybody. Whilst fleeing to the tower for safety, an entire family was wiped out in an attack.
Every year on the 2nd of June, the anniversary of the attack that claimed them, a huddle of doomed spirits can be seen running towards the tower and up the stairs, fated to relive their final tragic moments before disappearing as they reach the top of the stairs, forever unable to finally reach safety.
I mean, I don't know if that's like an intelligent haunting, if that's like a residual death loop kind of thing.
Mm.
But, oh, so close.
Yep. No, thank you.
Now, whilst that was not an exhaustive list of spirits, we hope this has piqued your interest in the dark side of this beautiful city. Murdered prostitutes, doomed lovers, tortured victims of inquisitions, cursed gamblers, and lost souls aplenty roam around for those brave enough to stay out all night.
So take care if you visit, for as beautiful and alluring as this city may be both day and night, you can never be sure who or what you will see when you stumble out of the pub in the wee out small hours, and whether you may be called to join the souls of a Amsterdam.
I hope you appreciate the pun.
I really do appreciate the pun.
Yeah. Good. I mean, that wasn't a very long one, we'll admit. But, yeah.
What did you think of Amsterdam?
I loved it.
The first episode back.
Yeah, it's our first one back from it. No,
yes, it's been back a month.
Things happened.
Well, life went happened. A month ago. Tomorrow.
Yeah, like life happened. But... It was really good. It was very enlightening. It was a lovely, lovely place. Very busy, but like I get it, cities are. But there was always something to do and something to see.
Yeah, we did a lot. We did a lot of museums. We were very historical.
We did.
Yeah, we did one which was the very first museum on the day we got there was just called Body Works.
Yeah.
And it's basically where people die and leave their body to this museum. They then get like embalmed and plastered, yeah, and then set in different positions. Well, their skin gets taken off, there was no skin,
yeah,
and then you can see what the body looks like doing things. Like, I had someone on a swing, I had someone jumping over a fence, they had this one like torso of a man that was cut directly in half,
yeah,
so you could see what the inside and of someone looks.
It's not always healthy people either, they've got people with dementia and things, so they had like an Alzheimer's brain, they had a smoker's lung, yep. They had someone with pancreatic cancer, and
it was weird to see like a tumor,
yeah,
inside of an organ,
but they put it next to a healthy one,
yeah,
so you can see the difference.
Mm-hmm.
it was really, really interesting, very nice. And it was all about that, because they have different, they've got ones around the world, I think they've got different, yeah, themes. That one was all about happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually, it was really interesting.
It was really cool. We recorded a lot. Some of the snippets of it is in our vlog, but we'll probably do a video just of each museum, because we recorded a lot in each museum. Just collating all of our stuff.
It's just getting around to it, to be honest with you, because like we literally come straight back into it, straight back to work.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's...
Yeah, and then the next museum we went to was Anne Frank House, which we'll talk about in more detail next week in our Anne Frank episode.
Mm-hmm. But we would definitely recommend going.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, that was the first thing we knew we wanted to do. And you can only book it 6 weeks before you're going.
Yeah.
So we had an alarm set on your phone and everything. So as soon as it's 6 days, I was like, Carrie, tomorrow we can book Anne Frank. And we got it. Because my sisters went and didn't get it.
Yeah.
They left it too late. And then we did the Medieval Torture Museum, which we spoke about here.
We did.
I thought it was a good museum. I don't know whether it was better because we had just done other stuff that is legal in Amsterdam at the time. but looking back, there was nothing in the museum that I thought was any different to if it had been one in London. As in, all the exhibitions and all the different bits of equipment in there was what we'd learned about. I didn't see anything particularly new.
Having researched for this and learned about like the Council of Blood and everything, I think they could probably have done an exhibition about that and just maybe geared it a bit more to that.
Yeah.
Stuff that they used during the Spanish Inquisition. You know, it's they could have done that potentially. I mean, it was a good museum.
Yeah. Some of the stuff had in there. We were on our own as well. We had the entire run of the museum. And thinking about it now, we must have sounded insane. Because if you remember, we went from each plaque and read out loud to each other what it was, but the in its entirety around this entire museum.
I mean, the CCTV would have been great. they could have recorded us and used us as an audio guide. But
I don't know, because I don't know how we sounded.
We sounded okay in our own heads, but probably not. We understood each other.
Yeah, enough, and it's fun. But yeah, that was cool.
It was.
Then what other museum did we do?
We did the Venus Temple Sex Museum.
We did. I was not... Okay, Amsterdam is known for sex.
Yeah.
Did not expect to see as much penis as we saw in that museum.
There was penises from all over the world. There was a lot. There was a lot.
There was a lot.
And some very interesting positions that I genuinely, like, I got backache just looking at them.
But also strange artwork. And it's in my video of a woman, I think, receiving cunnilingus from an octopus.
I mean,
I think that's what it was. Or the octopus was devouring this lady.
I mean, she looked to be enjoying it.
I don't get it.
But it's the fact that They had artifacts from as far back as like ancient
Greece. That's what I really liked.
And it was a genuine historical museum. Yeah, they had
genuine.
And it shows how prevalent this kind of... There were Greek... there's a special name for them. I can't remember which one it is. It's like the terracotta pottery with the black painting on it. My brain's blanked on it now. But there's images of that, and you look at it and you know exactly what is going on in that picture.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of thousand years have passed, but you know what they're doing.
Yeah, it might sound really cliche, but sex is like the international language that everyone knows. You don't need to, whatever language you speak at all, everyone, sex you is don't like need to universal. Speak
no.
And that was what I really kind of liked about the museum, seeing the Greek, the Romans, and then through from like 1500s to the kind of now.
Yeah.
It hasn't really changed. The amount in which it's depicted and how it wasn't taboo back then. They used to have pictures of people having sex or women, naked women and naked men and everywhere. They used to, that's just what you did.
Hanging up in
tea. It's more taboo now, but everything is still the same.
Yeah. And we think we're really enlightened right now, and you know we're all woke and everything's great, but we're really not.
We're really not. We're still quite. We're a lot more sheltered.
Yeah.
Especially the English. We're quite prudish here in England.
If I'm a lip, it doesn't happen. Just lie back and think of England.
Literally, lie back and think of England is like one of a big sentence.
Yeah. Huh. I can honestly say that I've never thought in the middle of sex. Ooh. I like the rolling hills of Yorkshire.
I hope you do now.
I'm sorry to the next person I sleep with. If I just randomly halfway through go, Yorkshire.
But also, congratulations to the people listening who she has slept with, who know that she didn't think of England.
You know, France, Scotland, Germany, maybe, but not England.
I'm not going to turn around halfway through and go, bonjour.
I don't know.
You might be thinking of a croissant. Oh. Or a baguette.
Hopefully only a breakfast. Oh, this is taking a turn.
Hey, it's a dark cup. They can listen to the dark.
They can.
Back to museums.
Yeah.
That same day, we had like a very, it's going to sound bad, sex-filled day. We did the sex museum, yeah. And then we went out for dinner,
yeah.
And we went to a sex show.
Yeah, that was enlightening.
I didn't expect.
Boobies have been crossed.
I feel like I expected boobies. Yeah. I expected lap dances.
I expected nakedness.
And I thought like lap dances or doing, you know, some sort of gymnastics naked. I didn't expect full on intercourse. And it felt very strange with you there. It felt very weird sitting with my best friend basically watching porn. It felt odd.
I don't think there's anybody else I would be capable of watching it with. In a weird kind of a way. But I did notice that through the entirety of that, we only made eye contact when there was nobody on stage. It was just that moment of sitting there. And to be fair, like I was admiring both genders. It's, you know what I do. But it was just that moment of, I'm very hyper aware that you're sitting right next to me.
Right. And the room was also full of strangers.
Yeah.
And yeah. There was German techno sex.
Yeah. Really lacklustre BDSM.
Yeah. And then, as we said in the beginning, this woman pulled out about 20 feet of bright neon multicoloured string.
From somewhere that string should not be.
And she said it didn't stop.
It didn't stop. And she was pole dancing and everything with it. And I do remember as we walked out, I was like, I've never felt the urge to floss down there. It was just like, what? And there was a woman who wrote on a man's chest.
Oh, yeah.
She did
not.
Boy.
Yeah, she the great penmanship, but she was not holding the pen with her hand.
Yeah.
If I try and do that, I'd pop a hip out. And I'm only 34. Look, we both know I'm clumsy, and I'm old. I've got arthritis, man.
Boy.
I'm not really selling myself here.
No.
I'm old and decrepit, and halfway through, I might randomly talk about Yorkshire.
That'll be your Tinder bio.
I'm going to put that on Facebook right now, actually.
Oh, my God. Yes. And then our last museum was on our last day. We went to the Red Light Secrets Museum, which is Museum of Prostitutes. And I actually found that really interesting because you kind of find out what it takes to be a prostitute, the rules and regulations. It's not just a case. I know this might make me sound quite naive. It's not just a case of being like, oh, you pay me for sex. There's so many rules and regs that you have to adhere to.
Yeah.
And the prostitute can refuse you. You can go up to her door and she can be like, no thanks.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise that.
And it's all at the museum. You've got to be so careful. And they've got strict laws. Like, they've got regulations to help. So there's, like, healthcare and things like that. But they've also got very strict laws against pimps and things.
And it's very unlike women prostitutes. There's not male prostitutes, they're all women. And it's very rare that women will accept other women to sleep with.
Yeah.
They might do in a threesome scenario with another man, but that is purely at the prostitute's discretion.
But yeah, it's not often they would do it.
No. So yeah, Amsterdam has left a mark.
It has. It has indeed.
And I will be going back one day.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know what else there is to do, though. We did quite a lot in 4 days.
I would be interested in going to the Bronx Museum just to see, like, the history of the area. But as I said at the time, like, if we didn't get to do that, it's not a massive deal because we can look at natural history museums pretty much anywhere.
But also, I guess, Van Gogh Museum.
Yeah.
Our friend Matt was really, really pissed at us for not going to the Van Gogh Museum.
Hi, Matt. Love you.
No. He wasn't spending the entire time trying to get me to.
That's just your friendship and I think, love you. No. He's trying to get you to go to SawCon.
Yeah.
But it was a pun.
No, it was he wanted to insult me.
Yeah.
He wanted me to be like, what's SawCon? And he was then going to be like, rude. Yeah. Horrible.
There's little places like the,
I can't remember the name of it. I think Kuchenhof, I think. The tulip fields.
I was going to say that.
Yeah. That would. That
we
would
be went good. In March. Prime tulip field seeing this.
I know, right?
But we had so much other stuff booked and all the historical stuff.
We walked 50 miles, guys. 50 miles we walked.
I have to do double that in 5 days.
Yes, yes. Should we plug that? I think we should.
If you want.
If you love our Emily, like we do, like I do, I love on that Emily. She is going on a trek to raise money for breast cancer through the Copperfield charity. And she's going on a trek with the likes of Giovanna Fetcher.
Mm-hmm.
And who else?
Elle Everday, who came runner-up in RuPaul Drag Race UK. And Candice Brown, who won the Great British Bake Off a couple of years ago.
Nice. So some pretty big names.
Yeah, and more to be announced.
So, what are the dates in June?
10th to the 16th of June.
She's going on a trek across Hadrian's Wall, which I'm so jealous that you're actually getting to see Hadrian's Wall before me. And, like, you've got to take... If you keep your phone, you've got to take pictures of the forts and all the Roman stuff and just, like...
We're going to the castles as well. We're not going to be there a lot for like we're walking.
Yeah. But so. You'll have to remember like the ones you want to see and then we'll go back up and have a look. Because right. I've got to take you to Vindolanda at some point. But anyway. So you're doing that to raise money. And how much have you raised so far?
£1,093.
Which is pretty damn good. And as both of us have had people in our lives affected by cancer, we've both lost people to cancer as well. So it's a very important cause.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll put the links on our webpage. If you can support her, great. If not, just give some words of encouragement.
Yeah.
And we will keep updating you as she walks along. So I'll be in charge of socials that week.
Yeah.
So whilst Em is trekking, I shall be typing. And I couldn't find a word that rhymed with trekking. But so we'll keep you updated on it. And remember, it's important, check yourself.
Yes, so you know, check it whether you think that, like every month. So if there's a change, you are aware.
And not just women too, men can get breast cancer.
400 men a year get diagnosed with breast cancer.
Exactly. So check yourself before you wreck yourself. That actually kind of works.
I'll let you have that one. Yeah. We've rambled on now for 15 minutes. I'm going to let you go now. And don't forget, 2 weeks from today is our Anne Frank episode, one you do not want to miss.
Thank you so much for listening.
Take care.
Bye. What's the button?